This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where 1-800-CALL-COLLECT, how about 1-800-CALL-CONNECT, call Dalton Connect, that is, and make it a long-distance call while you're at it. Dalton Connect, Bronny James, welcome to Father Sunny Southern California, where history is being made every day. And this upcoming October, the first father-son duo in NBA history will be suiting up together as teammates on the Lakers. We are all witnesses once again. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. And Tommy, I am aptly naming this episode Father-Son Connection. Your thoughts on that name?
I like that name. I don't have any comments.
I like killed three birds with one stone.
You did.
Or two birds with one stone. anyways, the first two-day NBA draft extravaganza is over. The Lakers came away with a consensus top 10 lottery pick in 6'6 swingman Dalton Connect, and they also came away with LeBron James' son, Bronny James. So day one, unexpected. Day two, expected, but still historic. Tommy, before we get into the breakdown of these guys' games, how are you feeling coming out of that draft with regards to just the fan sentiment of it all?
Yeah, I'm super, super pumped with how the draft turned out for the Lakers. I mean, I don't even remember, honestly, in all the draft pods. I'm sure at some point, because you covered like almost every player, like maybe you talked about Dalton Connect. I don't know if we even talked about him together because we never contemplated that he would even be close to our range.
We did not. Nope. Yeah. I did not.
So it's like, it's almost like the Cam Whitmore thing last year where it's like, wait, this guy who was like mock top five keeps like slipping and slipping and slipping. Anyway, it almost takes away the sting of how bad the JHS fail ended up being last year with like the three guys who were drafted like right after JHS being like significantly better than he was. But it's as big of a home run as I think the Lakers could have expected. I mean, a few weeks ago, we didn't know if we would have this pick. Then the Pelicans deferred. Then like you're looking at the draft, and even taking Connect's name off the board, there were guys, Missy was still on the board, Dron Holmes was still on the board, although it seemed like the Nuggets were pretty focused on him. But you know, there were guys that would have been totally reasonable to take at 17. And then there's Dalton Connect, who was a consensus lotto pick. I mean, if you read the scouting reports before the draft, Dalton Connect was like kind of, first of all, he was a consensus, like mocked at number 6 to the Hornets, right? Before they
not consensus, but he was a consensus top 10 pick going as high as top 6.
And like The Athletic, among other like major draft publications, had him at 6. And so like, you know, not only though was he, I guess, a consensus top 10 in this draft, it's like the reports kind of read like this guy's a lottery pick in any draft. And to get him at 17, I think is just like phenomenal. I mean, the guy does a little bit of everything as a scorer. You know, he can, I think he's like,
hold on. Before we get into his game, can I take it back to your thought process? Cause you kind of hinted at it with regards to our PTSD from last year. And I was texting with you along the way, but if you could sort of articulate for the fans how you and I were feeling, because as the picks were winding down and we were getting closer and closer to 17, before the draft, you know, we had thought there were rumors that the Lakers maybe were going to try and trade up to get the prospect that they liked. And at that time, the buzz, a lot of the buzz was surrounding Devin Carter and Ron Holland, who they both worked out. Ron Holland ended up not slipping at all. In fact, he may have even risen. He got drafted fifth to the Detroit Pistons. And then Devin Carter got past 10th, and we were like, okay, maybe this is a possibility, but there are some smart teams ahead of us and teams that are a win now teams. He ended up getting drafted by the Sacramento Kings. And then we faced the, after the Wizards drafted Bub Carrington, who I think actually threw the draft for a loop because Bub was more slated in the 20s, but he got drafted by the Wizards at 14. And so that kind of led to the slide. And also I think the other factor that led to the slide is the Minnesota Timberwolves coming out of nowhere to trade for a number 8 pick, which was the San Antonio Spurs pick for Rob Dillingham. So there are some reasons why Dalton Connect slid, but we still had some obstacles with the Miami Heat and the Philadelphia 76ers in front of us. So as you saw us inching closer and closer to that 17th pick, how badly was the PTSD from last year sort of haunting you? Because it was almost the exact same scenario of Cam Whitmore, consensus top 10 lotto pick. Some would even say top 5 consensus lotto pick, like legitimately, was there for the taking for the Lakers at 17. And instead of taking him, the Lakers took, obviously, Jalen Hood-Schifino, who, you know, some teams had worked out. He was getting some lottery buzz, but it felt like the Lakers overthought that pick. So how nervous or anxious were you as Dalton Connect was still on the board and we were inching closer and closer to the number 17 pick?
So I think at some point, right, it was like, you know, we were at pick 12 or 13 and you're like, oh man, Connect is still on the board. And I almost didn't want to engage with you. You talk about my anxiety level. Like and to be very clear, I had other friends texting me about Connect at the same time. And I just ignored the text because I was like, number one, there's not a chance Connect is still going to be on the board by the time it gets to us. Cause like especially with teams like the Sixers picking before us, I was like, okay, there are teams that need shooting and scoring that are picking before us. And like, especially with the Sixers, when you think about like Tobias Harris is leaving, Buddy Hield, I think, is a free agent, right? So it's like, it just, that felt, and that was right before us. And I even sent you a thing that was like, why does it seem like the guy that we really wanted is always like two picks before? It happened with like,
yep.
And I mean, Max Christie seems like he's going to work out, but famously the guy we traded into the second round to take was Andrew Nembhard, right? And he ends up going a few picks before Max Christie and has been really great for the Pacers. And then same thing last year. It's like we took JHS and forget about Cam Whitmore, all those guards like Kayson Wallace, Keontae George, Kobe Bufkin, like all the guys that we spent so much time kind of projecting and talking about literally all went in that band right before we took JHS. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I kind of was getting extreme PTSD about last year and was like, it not only is Connect not going to be on the board, if he is still on the board, we're for some reason going to take McCain or we're going to take, Jacoby Walter,
Johnny Furphy out of Kansas, or yeah,
Johnny Furphy. It's going to be some weird pick. Like Da Silva, who I liked in the pre-draft, went right after us. Like Da Silva's not a player you can take when Connect is on the board, in my opinion, right? So it just like, I was like, it's going to be one of those guys and I'm going to be disappointed and have to rationalize it. And when we actually took him, it was just such a relief. And then I think I texted you, like, of course, right after we made that pick, right? Rob Pelinka, who for months at a time will like disappear from the spotlight when like the house is burning. But the second he gets this like pick that he knew right away, this was like a steal pick, he immediately holds a press conference to discuss the pick. And it's like, okay, dude. So that, it was one of the more exciting, I think, times, I think, as a fan watching the draft in recent years for me.
Yeah, we actually closed the deal. We did what we were supposed to do, Tommy. We did not overthink things. The Lakers did the right thing. They took the best player available, but also one of the best fits for them available for this LeBron James, Anthony Davis, JJ Redick, three-point shooting-led, mathematics-led team. And, you know, the phrase steal of the draft gets tossed around every year, and it usually sounds like BS propaganda. I think we heard some of that sentiment from even JHS last year, since some people had him gaining lotto buzz, right? But in this case for Dalton Connect, across the board, across every smart draft analyst board, this was an objective steal. This was as objective a steal as you can get with how loosely that word is tossed around these days. People who hate the Lakers were praising this pick, and they were mad that he slipped to them. So in all aspects, the Lakers, I'm just so glad that the Lakers did the right thing. And the Lakers themselves seem genuinely shocked and overjoyed. Rob mentioned that they had Dalton Connect number 10 on their personal board, but they didn't even work him out. And Dalton Connect didn't even work out with the Lakers himself, because him and his camp did not think that they would even fall that far. Unlike JHS last year, Tommy, where it felt like that pick was sort of the worst of all worlds in terms of being a limbo pick in which JHS was neither athletic nor a good shooter. He wasn't even a pure point guard. He wasn't the youngest in the draft. He wasn't explosive. He wasn't a 6'9 plus player at a position of need. And then on top of it, JHS's actual college production and his stats, they weren't great. You know, you had to do a lot of projecting with him. He only averaged 13 points, 4 rebounds, 3.7 assists, and 2.8 turnovers, shooting 33% from three. And you're like, okay. But Tommy, with Dalton Connect, there is no need to squint and project out. The numbers are there if you want them.
Yeah.
21.7 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 46% from the field, 39% from 3, hitting 2.6 a game as the primary weapon on Tennessee, with defenses solely geared to stop him. This year, this pick, Dalton Connect, unlike the JHS pick last year, seems to be a pick who checks a lot more boxes for the Lakers in terms of being a knockdown three-point shooter who can come off screens, hit shots off the dribble, and pull up. He's also an older prospect at 23 years old who's proven that he can be a pretty seamless plug-and-play guy for at least 15 minutes on the next stage. So his age actually was a positive for the Lakers, whereas it seems like his age was the thing that scared most other teams off. And then on top of it, he's strong and athletic, and because he's a late bloomer, he had a growth spurt and was actually like, what, 5'6 as a freshman in high school. Because he's a late bloomer, even though he's 23 years old, there's actually a little bit of upside to him. And when you watch him with the ball and how he gets his buckets, that becomes all the more apparent. So while he's not exactly a 6'8 plus wing who's great at defense or a 6'10, 7-foot rim-running big man, with this pick, the Lakers checked a lot more boxes this year than they did, obviously, last year, and that goes without stating. So why don't you talk a little bit about, your thoughts on Dalton Connect as a player?
Well, to build off your point about, like, you don't have to squint your eyes and, like, kind of twist your mind to figure out how this is going to work, right? It's like, for anyone listening who's also a football fan, right, I think this is a big thing that comes up a lot in college football scouting when people are being, you know, scouted to be drafted to the NFL. And there's always this talk about, like, how certain schemes and certain systems will cause certain guys, like, skill sets to be maybe inflated in ways that, you know, wouldn't necessarily work in the NFL. And I think a big one is, like, quarterbacks and receiver and, like, skill players who do really well with spread offenses. Okay, so a similar concept, if you want to take it to college basketball, is one of the knocks on some of the UConn guys, including Donovan Clingan, is he actually this high of a basketball IQ player who's making all of these reads? Or is it just Dan Hurley's offense? Because as we've seen, like, it's like, you know, one example, Dan Hurley's offense will run 29 seconds where it looks like everyone is just reading and reacting to the defense, but in reality, all of these were, like, pre-scripted motions, right? And so I think the thing with Connect is, like, his stats are actually even more impressive when you consider the fact that he was not like in some sort of weird like college scheme that's only going to work in college. In fact, he had the connect rules. Like, teams had to figure out how to try to stop this guy. If you look at his highlights, he's shooting consistently like jump shots over contests. He's got guys draped all over him when he's running around. This guy's not just like standing around shooting spot up shots with additional like occasional attacks off closeouts. He's like doing everything. And so it's like, you look at it, you look at the way that he scores, and, you know, the catch and shoot 88 percentile as a shooter in college, again, at his volume, extremely impressive. Like, you look at the shooting as a ball handler off of coming around screens, extremely impressive, how efficient he is at that. His ability to attack the rim 39 inch vertical, like, super underrated parts of his game. Like, this, we didn't just draft like JJ Redick's slightly taller, you know, counterpart, current counterpart. It's like, you know, he's a very, very, very dynamic offensive player. And I just think another big key that people aren't talking about is like, this guy made the transition in the last like four, or I guess 5 years, right? From going from junior college to playing D2, going from D2 to playing D1, but not even just like any D1, playing in one of the biggest conferences in college, one of the biggest programs, you know, in college, for one of the most storied coaches in college, playing in the tournament, you know, in March, and continuing to just destroy people. I mean, the guy came in, like, no ramp up, just boom, started destroying people right away, you know, and It took him a year, maybe transitioning from junior college to Northern Colorado D2, but boom, like, hit the ground running coming into Tennessee. And I just have no doubt. That's like another thing to me that's like really encouraging is I'm not really that scared about this guy, like, not being able to step up when the lights become like super bright. In fact, I think he'll like embrace it, and he's used to it, and he's done it for years and years. He's used to constantly throwing himself into like way more intense, you know, environments and continuing to produce the same results. So I think there's no reason that can't continue now.
Yeah, he's totally a gamer. He's a fiery competitor, and you see it in the way that he plays and shows his emotions after these crazy tomahawk jams and alley-oop dunks and stuff. And yeah, first year in D1, and he leads Tennessee to an Elite Eight showing. It's crazy. Why don't we take it to break? When we return, I'll give more of my thoughts on Dalton Connect, and maybe we can get into some comps as well. So we will catch you guys after the break.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, so we are back. Tommy, you mentioned at number 17, the Lakers had a couple options left, including Yves Missi, who they really liked. And I think if Connect wasn't there, we would have gotten a big man. But they were also looking at Da Silva. And having watched a couple of Da Silva's interviews, I mean, that dude is really smart. I give him a lot of credit. A lot of teams really liked his just basketball IQ and just how articulate he was. But for me, you guys know, I wasn't high on Da Silva because of his lack of explosiveness, his lack of physicality, and lack of pop. Well, Dalton Connect, even though he's a little bit shorter, has all of those aforementioned things, including more upside. So it's like we got the lit, swaggy version of Da Silva in Dalton Connect, you know? So I'm very happy with the pick. Just to level set things a bit, Dalton Connect is 23 years old. He is 6'6.5 in shoes with a really nice 6'9, 6'10 wingspan. He was the SEC Player of the Year in his first year in Division I. And he also hit a bunch of scoring milestones for Tennessee. I think he had like 6 35-plus point games, 10 30-point games, 1 40-point game against Kentucky. I mean, he is one of the best flat-out scorers and offensive weapons in this class. That's what people call him, you know? Yeah. People say Rob Dillingham, whatever. It's Dalton Connect. He's right up in that category. He's a pure movement shooter, but he's also much more than that. He is the definition of a walking bucket, like I just said, who can do it in a myriad of ways. Really solid handles, really solid finishing ability. He can pull up on a dime anywhere in the mid-range and calmly sink a fadeaway J with defenders in his face, as you mentioned. I found it interesting that he cited Kevin Durant as one of his favorite players, because you can actually see some of Kevin Durant's offensive navigation in his game and the ease and fluidity with which KD gets his buckets in the mid-range. It's very similar to how Connect gets his shots off. He's like never bothered. He's always going at his own pace, but then all of a sudden, boom, he'll like attack the basket or just rise up for that J. And he's always, again, so unbothered, even if there's a hand in his face, and he calmly sinks those shots down, even though he's 4 inches shorter than Kevin Durant. And I think he has really intriguing on-ball juice and some nice shiftiness. You see him like handling the ball at the top of the key, splitting double teams, and then waltzing into the lane for these scoop-de-doo up and under layups against traffic. I think that is going to be his swing skill, Tommy, his athleticism and ball handling ability, because with how lethal a shooter he is, I mean, he's a demon from the three-point line, Tommy. He's a demon. That's what the kids are saying these days. He's a demonic three-point shooter. But with the gravity he has from the three-point line, the fact that he can attack these closeouts so hard and then go up at the rim and finish with such force, speed, and athleticism, that is a dangerous combo. And then obviously he has the handles to get there in the first place, but you know he's going to have so much space because dudes are going to close out so hard on him. I mean, that is, again, that is going to be his swing skill of what separates him from just being like a Kyle Korver to, I don't know, man, Mike Miller, you know, someone more dynamic offensively all around.
A lot more dynamic. And I think that's the upside that they saw, right? And upside is not just age. It's also like exposure. Again, this guy started his career at junior college. He didn't start year one at Duke. You know, he didn't start year one at Kentucky. And so it's like he only spent 1 year in a D1 program so far. So yes, he is a little bit older, but I think there's a lot that can be unlocked in his game. And again, he's putting up numbers like this, getting his shots off and hitting very, very, very efficiently. And his handle and self-creation ability, it's not even fully there yet. And you clearly can see that like he can do it a little bit. But once those handles get tightened up with NBA training, and famously, like, handles are like one of the things that are easier to like develop in the league, right? So like if he can refine that a little bit, I don't know what the limit for this guy is, man. Yeah. I mean, again, this is not Matt Ryan who can attack some closeouts. I feel like that's what like a lot of people sort of thought about him. Oh, he's like a movement shooter. I get it. You know what I mean? Okay, he can attack some closeouts. He can score at every level. He can score off the dribble. He could score coming off screens. He could score without the ball. He could score with the ball. I mean, he could do a lot of things.
Here's the other biggest thing that I find very enticing about him is his frame and body build. He's strong, dude. He's bulky. Yeah. I think he played football in high school too, but he was too small or short at the time. But he absorbs contact really well. He finishes at the rim with force. He can grab boards. I just like his overall frame because that's how he sort of navigates his way to whatever spot he wants to get to, because he's not going to get bumped off. You know, this is Austin Reeves' problem sometimes, right? When he goes up against a more physical guard, sometimes he can get knocked off and he has to do his herky-jerky stuff. Like, dude, Dalton Connect will just ram right by you or ram right through you.
Oh,
he's 100%. That strong, athletic, and explosive. You know, it's not. And also, I don't want to hear sneaky athletic, Tommy, just because he's white. He's just athletic.
No, he's
athletic. Not afraid of contact. So.
He literally tested a 39-inch vertical. He's much, much more athletic than a lot of guys who were taken in the lottery. I know athleticism isn't everything, but, you know, he also, everything you just said, like, he puts it into practice. His second year at Northern Iowa, As a starting guard, he averaged 7 rebounds a game in college. That's crazy, okay? Even at Tennessee, again, as a starting 6'5 guard, 5 boards a game. That's really, really good, okay? And Tennessee had guys who could get boards. So I just think that, like, I don't know. At some point, it's like you can't even say, I think he's going to surprise people because everyone has already, like, decided this was a huge steal, but it just feels like so obvious to me, the fit with this team and like the fit with the new coach. And he's going to have it so much easier than so many other rookies taken in his range because he gets to play with LeBron and AD, and he's just going to like feast off that.
Yeah, and not to pit these two guys against each other, but I want to use Austin Reeves as an example and a comp just because we saw the Austin Reeves progression in college, you know, switching schools and divisions as well, and actually switching roles. And if you remember, when Austin Reeves transferred to, what was the last school he transferred to again?
Oklahoma.
When he transferred to Oklahoma, he went from being a knockdown three-point shooter who could shoot 40% from three to being more of the on-ball primary initiator. And you saw the drop-off in Austin Reeves' shooting percentage, right, when he was more on-ball. Dalton Connect, there was no drop-off in his three-point percentage, even though he was being, you know, yeah, the Connect rules were being imposed upon him. He still shot 39%, hitting 2.2 a game, or I think even more than that, you know, 2.6 threes a game, with the ball in his hands as the primary scorer. And so to me, that is super impressive. There are going to be a lot of different intangibles that will determine whether or not Dalton Connect can be better than Austin Reeves at the next level. But in terms of their college careers, there's no contest, you know? Yeah. With regards to some concerns with Dalton Connect, it all boils down to his defense. His team defense is actually really solid and really good. So if we have a good foundational team defense set, I think that'll really help Dalton Connect because he is a smart player and he really hustles out there. He really hustles out there and has energy on the defensive end. But when it comes to on-ball point of attack defense, he does get blown by a lot. The good thing with him is he's good at recovering and will usually make the extra effort to try and at least block the shot. In that way, he's kind of like a JaVale McGee defender at the guard slash wing position where, you know, he's not good at staying in front of his man, but he's good at contesting at the end and maybe even getting the extra effort or the block or rebound. And then also, I mean, this is, you know, nothing, but he's a little soft-spoken and not very... You wish he was a better interview. He's a man of few words. And, you know, in high school and college, he was academically behind a little. But it's because all he wanted to do was hoop. And, you know, being able to use proper diction at the NBA level won't matter when Dalton Connect is pulling up from 40 feet or yamming it down your throat. Lastly, do you have any comps for Dalton Connect? I don't want to hear Bogdan Bogdanovic because that's been overused at this point. Give me a high-end comp for Dalton Connect that you see if everything shakes out right.
I don't know how high, maybe this is not high-end enough for your high-end, but one guy who sort of stands out to me as somebody who could be a reasonable comp is like a almost like a better Max Strus. Like Max Strus, who can, you know, he can be a movement shooter, but he can also do some things with the ball in his hands. And he's like a tough player, right? I think Max is a little bit more, obviously a lot more, I should say, developed as a defender. But Dalton Connect is, you know, similarly, like they'll be scrappy and fight for boards and they're both pretty athletic. And so Max Strus is one guy I kind of think of when I watch Connect play.
I like that. I would put that more in the median comp. For me, my high-end comp for Max Strus, my high-end comp for Dalton Connect, I think the Bogdan Bogdanovic is actually a really good comp. Bogdan's a little bit of a better passer, but Dalton's more explosive. But outside of that comp that everybody's already been using, I have two. One for this generation and one for the past generation, Tommy. For this generation, I could see him becoming like a bulkier, slightly taller Tyler Hero. This is like the high-end comp, okay? You know, if he's truly a bucket at the next level, like a bulkier, slightly taller Tyler Hero, because he has all the sort of shiftiness and smooth shooting and fluidity that a scoring wingman, scoring guard would have in like Tyler Hero. But to take it all the way back, Tommy, I also could see him as a more explosive Wally Szczerbiak.
Oh.
Wally Szczerbiak, 6'7", bulky frame. He wasn't just a three-point shooter. He was actually teammates with LeBron James in Cleveland. So I find that to be an interesting comp if he can sort of round out his entire game. With regards to a median comp, though, I could also see him being like a more explosive Kevin Huerter. Kevin Huerter is a better passer at this stage, but I think he's more, again, more athletic and explosive. But if he can even just turn into Kevin Huerter, I think that would be great. Or like a shiftier, more versatile Grayson Allen. So it's funny because a lot of people had the Miami Heat taking Dalton Connect when it got to 14 or 15, whichever pick the Miami Heat had. I think it was 15, mainly because you saw what they've done to guys like Max Strus and Duncan Robinson. And Dalton Connect would have just easily been a protege next in line to be one of those guys. And so I see a little bit of Duncan Robinson in him as well. Worst case scenario, Tommy, do you have any worst case scenarios if Dalton Connect doesn't hit?
Worst case scenario, I guess, would be like Adam Morrison.
Like a
worse Dougie McBuckets, because I feel like Dougie McBuckets, you know, Doug McRae, he hasn't been a like bust, right? I can't remember where he was taken. I think he was taken late lotto. And I guess like compared to what Dougie McBuckets did in college, his NBA career was kind of a bust, but I mean, the dude is still in the league, right? It's like half the guys drafted are not in the league after 6 years. So I don't, you know, I guess like a, you know, Dougie McBuckets who, you know, is even a little bit worse than that, I guess would be like a low end outcome.
I had that on my list as well. My worst case scenario, Tommy, is Sauce Castillo, Nick Stauskas.
Oh.
All right. With that said, let us turn our attention now to our quick thoughts on Bronny James. There is a lot of obvious noise surrounding this pick, but for me, regardless of what angle you want to take, a father who gets to play with his son for the very first time in NBA history, and the fact that that father just so happens to be the GOAT, I think that should be the headline because, you know, this is historic, this is legacy manifested right in front of us, and it's just even really hard to wrap your head around what this looks like because it's you've never seen it happen before. And, you know, beyond basketball, from the family aspect of things, with regards to the James family, LeBron, Savannah, Bryce, you know, his sister, like what a proud moment for them to be able to witness their son play with their father with on the Los Angeles Lakers a year after this dude suffered a heart attack and wasn't sure if he was ever going to play again. You know, this is a tremendous story. If you want to raise the banner for nepotism, you can go ahead and do that. But, you know, as Woj aptly stated, there have been many instances of this going on around the league over so many years. And as I mentioned on Twitter, Thanasis Antetokounmpo has held a roster spot for so many years simply because Giannis is his brother. This is no different, except Bronny James can actually play or has the chance to show us that he can play. We've seen enough of Thanasis to know that he 1,000% cannot play. If you want to talk about Bronny not being a draftable NBA player, because who drafts a player who only averages 5 points in college? Well, apparently the Bucks do, Tommy, because their first-round pick, AJ Johnson, averaged 2 points last year, and he was a first-round pick. Bronny is a number 55th, was the number 55th pick essentially out of the draft. So I'm not really sure what people are complaining about. Like, are people mad that LeBron steered his son, who apparently can't play basketball, to the Lakers because it's nepotistic? Or are people mad because Bronny James is actually good and other teams wanted to take a shot at him, but they couldn't? So for me, it's like, is Bronny good or not? Is he just falling back on his dad or not? People are kind of talking out of both sides of their ass on this topic at this point, and all I want to focus on is the fact that LeBron James gets to play with his son. This was always one of his dreams, and the Lakers made that happen, and this is kind of par for the course with the Lakers. They do right by their superstars, and this is just another example of that. So, yeah, your quick thoughts on Bronny James.
Maybe we are the minority here, right? But I'm actually kind of excited to see what he does. I think, yeah, you know, the reaction to Bronny James being drafted like by the Lakers is like, if the Lakers drafted me because I was LeBron's nephew, you know what I mean? Like current me, like literally me today as a 35-year-old man who hasn't played basketball in probably 15 years. Like that's the reaction, right? Not like we, with the number 55 pick, took a kid who last year was ESPN's number 20 ranked high school senior, right? So it's like Bronny James was well regarded coming out of high school. Of course, there were plenty of things to work on. People were excited for the USC team this year with Isaiah Collier and Bron, who was like the ESPN's number one, and then Bronny James, and to see what they could do. Obviously, like having cardiac surgery before the season starts, I just don't think. I mean, it seems silly to say, right? But it's like, people don't realize like the gravity of that. You know what I mean? And I don't know the details of what the procedures he had or whatever, but like, it's insane. Okay. And to go from that to like, you know, so he missed all of his practice time with his teammates, and he just like literally stepped in as the season was, you know, sort of in the flow. And as a freshman, it's already hard. As a freshman guard, it's even harder. And to just step in with like, you know, while everything has been going and your team is a mess, that's not easy, right? And so it's like, did the Lakers take a guy at 55 who may have gone undrafted? Possibly. Did a
that's
lot
like three picks away.
But it's like three picks away, right? And like, here's the thing, like, people are acting like we took Bronny James at 55. He was ranked like 185. Like, most people had Bronny James in their top 80, right? And I want to say a lot had them in the, in a lot had him in their top 60 to 70 even. So, you know, it's like at that point, you're really just taking a shot anyway. And so it's like, I'm just like kind of offended by all of this like discourse on behalf of LeBron and his family, because it's like, it really is taking away the accomplishment of Bronny, who I think deserved to be drafted eventually, right? And it's like, maybe he wouldn't have come out so fast if his father wasn't LeBron, but like, he would have been probably drafted eventually. And so it kind of minimizes that. But you know, I'm excited to see what happens. I think we took Scottie Pippen Jr. as on a two-way deal a couple years ago, and it was sort of a similar skill set, I guess. Scotty was obviously a four-year college player and was a lot more developed at that point. But, you know, kind of a guard with some girth, who has some strength and can defend, quickness at the point of attack, surprisingly athletic for their size. Like, I mean, Bronny had tested with a huge vertical. I think Bronny has a really good wingspan. I think he checks a lot of boxes as an NBA player. And I'm just like curious to see how his shot looks, because that's the one thing that has not been there for him through high school, through college, is a consistent jump shot and or consistent touch around the rim and things like that. That's something that I think we'll have to see develop. But again, if that's like the main thing you need to develop and all these other things are there, and by the way, you're not just like some random number 55 pick in any draft who has like, you know, is sort of living on a minimum contract and trying to pay rent, trying to pay, you know, your trainers, trying to pay your agent. Like, you know, your dad is LeBron James, so all the top training in the world is going to be accessible to you. And so I'm confident he'll take advantage of that. So, obviously Bronny, no one's expecting him to be like an impact player for us this year. Maybe even next year, because he's going to need time. But I just think this was such a low risk move, uncontroversial, keep LeBron happy. Like, I don't know. To me, it checks a lot of boxes, and I'm definitely not upset by it.
No, not at all. Basketball wise, Lakers get a point of attack defender, which they needed in this draft. They get like, you know, maybe a more explosive Davion Mitchell if everything hits right. They get one of the most athletic players in the draft. You cannot deny that. He had a 40-inch vertical at the combine. He also showed off his shooting potential, hitting 19 of 26 in their three-point movement drill. And yeah, the biggest thing is like, you know, he gets to play with his father, and we get to see JJ Redick and the Lakers get to put their new player development initiative to the test. Could it get noisy and weird past this first season once LeBron is demanding more minutes on behalf of Bronny? Sure. But for now, I feel like we should just focus on history being made with the first father-son duo in the NBA, and the fact that that father is LeBron James, and he is one of the best of all time to do it, and focus on the longevity of it all, and how this is even possible in the first place, you know? So, and again, AJ Johnson, the Bucks, first round, averaged 2 points last season. This is no different than that. You're banking on potential. It's not like, again, it's not Thanasis Antetokounmpo, okay? Tommy, 1 minute left. Free agency is coming up. Your thoughts on free agency? The Lakers have to wait on D'Angelo Russell, Cam Reddish, Jackson Hayes. They have to wait on their options, which are going to come, you know, by Saturday, because that's the deadline. But that is the main reason why the Lakers probably weren't able to pull off a deal, including, you know, attaching JHS to, you know, a future second or whatever to offload him, because JHS's contract at $3.8 million may prove valuable in a later deal in a larger package, but the Lakers need to know what contracts they have at their full disposal And that, you know, because of that, they need to wait on D'Angelo Russell, Jackson Hayes, and Cam Reddish. But yeah, just your overall vibe on free agency coming up, because it's here.
I think I'm going to have a lot more of a clear picture, I think, in the coming days when we see what these guys do with their options. It's going to be very, very interesting, because obviously if everybody opts in, people are going to most likely have to be traded. We will have like a roster crunch. If D'Lo opts out, I think that puts us in a really, really tough spot in terms of how are we going to replace that output and that talent with the limited resources that we have. So I'm a lot more scared about free agency than I was about the draft. I figured in the draft we would get someone, but free agency is really going to, I think, turn the tide of the league, especially with some of the big names who could be moving around. And I have a feeling we're going to be sort of stuck sitting on our hands just because we're sort of limited in terms of what we could do with our contracts and our other soft assets like picks and stuff.
Yeah, and if D'Lo opts in, or if he opts out and re-signs on a you know, slightly longer deal with the Lakers, then obviously it makes things a little bit more simple, because then the targets that the Lakers should look at in free agency, if they even have the tax pyramid level to use, are big men, right? Because they said that they are prioritizing a legitimate center next to Anthony Davis this offseason. And so far, through the draft, we have not gotten that big man, so it's going to have to come through either a trade or free agency. And D'Lo, Cam Reddish, Jackson Hayes, they kind of hold that in their hands right now. But yeah, we shall see what happens as soon as in the next day or two. And then free agency starts on Sunday, so everybody buckle up. But for now, Dalton Connect, Bronny James, this is awesome. This was a great draft for the Lakers. They did what they were supposed to do on pretty much every level, including keeping LeBron James happy. And that's kind of all that matters, unless LeBron James opts out and leaves. And that would be the funniest thing ever. He's like, I actually hate my son. What are you guys doing? But with that said, that'll do it for this episode. We will catch you guys when free agency starts. And hopefully, yeah, we can have a clearer vision of what this team next year is going to look like under JJ Redick. So with that said, Tommy, I will catch you later.
Peace.
See ya.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.